Welcome to this week's edition of Blind Like Me. I couldn't be happier. We have a lady on the phone who couldn't be happier. I've never known a time when I didn't think, well, sure, I could be a little happier. And what's behind door number three? Deborah Slaylor is with us. Hi, how are you?
I'm doing terrific. And I hope everyone is doing terrific as well.
And you couldn't be happier.
That's right.
I don't know that I've ever heard anybody say before, I couldn't be happier. But you said it, so we're going to take you at your word. Now, you live in what part of the country?
I live in the beautiful city of Huntsville, Alabama.
What is so great about Huntsville, Alabama?
Well, I'll tell you.
All right.
The culture here is just incredible. We have a symphony orchestra that... To me, when I even hear recordings of them on the radio station here, they sound as good as any other major orchestra in the country.
All right.
I say that with no prejudice at all. I mean, I just think they're really very good. They are so excellent. The chamber music series that we have has excellent programs. Last year, Marilyn Horn was here, the famous mezzo-soprano opera singer, for those of you that may not know. And this year we're having the group Chanticleer, the singing group, and the famous violinist Itzhak Perlman. We just have a wonderful variety of chamber music things come here.
Now, Chanticleer, you would think that they were Irish. That would be my guess, right?
Right, but they're actually an American singing group based in Los Angeles.
So you are really into classical and chamber music.
Well, that's my main training area is classical music, but I'm into virtually every kind of music except perhaps rap and hard rock. I'm also into something called the Huntsville Traditional Music Association, and they perform country and bluegrass music.
Oh, so you're eclectic in your musical tastes.
Oh, absolutely.
All right.
There's a famous man, Peter Schickele, and he has a program called Schickele Mix.
I know about Schickele Mix.
And he says, if it sounds good, it is good.
Yeah, he was based out of New York.
Right.
Peter Schickele, Schickele Mix. I never heard it, but I think it was on one of the New York, I guess on the New York Public Radio station up there. I guess you got to hear it some.
Yeah, it's carried on our public radio station here in Huntsville.
Well, we'll talk about our public radio station another time. I love them, but they don't do things to suit me. Of course, being an old radio man, I guess they wouldn't. Before we get into your music, and I want to talk a lot about that, let's get back to your early days. Where were you born?
I was born in Dubuque, Iowa in 1962, so that kind of gives away how old I am.
That pretty well tells us that you're 42, doesn't it,
right.
Huh? But I was 42 once. I remember it well, Vicki.
And I went to, my childhood was spent in Dubuque, my early childhood years. But when I was 6 years old, my parents were able to move to Vinton, Iowa, where I attended the Iowa Braille and Sight Saving School, as it was called at that time. They were able to move because my father was disabled after World War II, and so my mother wasn't working either, and so they weren't obligated to stay in Dubuque because of work. So they moved with me to Vinton so I could go home every night.
And his disability check would come as well to a residence in Vinton as it would to Dubuque or any place else.
Right.
That wasn't going to really make a whole lot of difference, was it?
Right.
Okay. So they moved so that you could be a day student at the School for the Blind.
Right.
The best of both worlds, Deborah. the best way, if you have to go to a school for the blind, that's the best way.
Well, it's true, but in my case, it would have been better if I could have stayed at the school because my parents were very overprotective.
Were they?
Yes.
In other words, they didn't let you ride the tricycle. And
right. They wouldn't let me do any of the things that little children would normally do. I was always told I'd get hurt. They didn't want me to play outside. They didn't even want me to associate with the other children at the school. So they'd come and get me right after classes. I even recall my mother coming into the school building to pick me up after class was done. And they finally worked with her on letting me walk out to the car. But, boy, I'll tell you, as hard as the school tried to get her to let me do things, she was always calling the school and talking to the principal and telling her, Debbie doesn't need to do this, and she doesn't need to have mobility, and she doesn't need to learn to cook, and somebody will always be there to take care of her.
That's a shame. It is. And you know that it was done out of a sense of love.
Right.
I mean, it was done for no malicious or reason other than the fact that she loved you and she wanted to protect you and she wanted the best for you.
Mm-hmm.
Never stopping to think that someday she wouldn't be here to provide the best for you.
Right. Yeah. She thought that should be the job of my brother or sister. I had a brother and sister who were both much older than me. They still live in the Dubuque, Iowa area.
Well, that's sad, but obviously you overcame it.
Yes.
In many ways. So you went to this school for the blind, and they taught you Braille.
Oh, yes.
And taught you language skills and all the things that that children should learn.
Absolutely.
How do you do with Braille? Do you still love it?
Oh, I love Braille. I couldn't live without my Braille. Both literary Braille and music Braille.
That's amazing. I couldn't live
without any of it.
That's amazing. Everybody I talk to loves Braille except me. I'm the only one. I'm the oddball. I had to be the oddball. You read books in Braille all the time?
Oh, I read books and magazines. Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Hmm.
I don't know where I'd be without it. I learned it starting in kindergarten and still read it today.
Well, that's good. I'm proud of you. I'm just as happy not reading it, but I'm glad that you do. But you did start in kindergarten. They have kindergarten at this blind school or what?
Oh, yes. It was an all-day kindergarten.
But they wouldn't let you do much at home. What did they let you do?
They let me play music. That was about it. I started out, even before I learned Braille music, I was playing by ear. And I played country and western. My dad played the guitar and sang country western music. And my brother had a rock and roll band, and he'd have me, a lot of times they'd get their songs off records, and he'd have me tell him the chords to the songs that they couldn't hear off the record.
Oh.
Or the chord they couldn't hear. Oh, let's have Debbie tell us, you know.
Yeah.
I was about 4 years old at that time.
And so you realized, or they realized that at an early age that you had some musical ability.
Yes. And when I got to the school, they immediately got me into piano lessons and when I started to learn to read Braille music.
Your father played guitar. Now, did he try to do this professionally, or he just...
Oh, no. He was just an amateur. It was just a hobby of his. He didn't have anything else, you know, any kind of a job or anything because of his disability, but he did enjoy playing the guitar and singing. And
so you were sitting home singing Tanya Tucker songs when you were little. Yeah.
Well, actually, yeah. Jimmy Rogers and Ernest Tubb was more like
old
country.
He was one of those guys, Rogers and Ernest Tubb. Well, I happen to love that stuff.
Isn't it wonderful? I do to this day, too, because that's the kind of stuff a lot of the people like to do in this traditional music association that I was telling you about. But, yeah, so that's what I would do when I'd be at home. I played a little organ that they had bought for
me. And he taught you the words, sir. He had records of all these songs, or taught you the words?
Right, he heard them on records, and then I'd learn to play them and sing them. And
well, if you had this I guess was in, you were born 62.
Right.
So I guess this was in the late 60s, early 70s.
Yes.
If he had those records, then he had some 78s. He had some big old thick records.
Well, actually, what they had, they were on 33. They were like compilation albums, I guess. And
they had put some of that stuff on albums by then, I guess. Yeah, because now we have, I probably have a half a dozen Jimmy Rogers CDs.
Oh yeah.
And all the Ernest Chubb stuff. I think there's six Ernest Chubb box sets. Believe it or not. So all that Ernest Chubb. I've got four of them. I'm still missing two. I love the old country stuff. That's my...
I love it, too. I think it's great.
But yet you love the classical.
Yeah. Oh, yes. That's what I started to learn at school, was the classical music. They started getting me into listening to classical music. The first time I ever really knew that I loved classical music, though, was when I was 12 and I got my first radio. And I turned it on and I found a classical station. And I thought, "Oh, this is wonderful."
Back then there were some FM classical stations that you could
The public radio stations, of course, played a lot of classical music. That was my first introduction to NPR as well.
Yeah.
So I really, like I say, having that radio kind of made me realize that I really did love the classical music.
Yeah, and I don't dislike classical. In fact, I like it. I enjoy the instrumentation. I enjoy what these people can do.
Right.
I don't like the slow stuff. But when you look at much of classical music, or some of it, not much of it, I will say some of it, it all has some 1-4-5 also.
Right.
And, you know, they go to different places, and they think nothing of, if you're in C, if C is 1, they would think nothing of putting a G-sharp chord in somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of 1-4-5, I've noticed, in classical music also. It's not like Jimmy Rogers 1-4-5, and you know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
But there is some 1-4-5 in classical. But anyway, so you're in the blind school, and they're teaching you music, and they got you into piano, and you gave little recitals, I guess, all as a child.
Yeah, we had recitals at our school. Every child who was taking piano or some other instrument performed in several recitals throughout the year.
Yeah.
And that was so much fun. I really enjoyed that. I always have loved to perform.
So your blind school days were good, other than the fact that your mother was trying to overprotect you.
Oh, yes. I mean, other than the constant fight between the school and my mother.
Yeah, she just couldn't.
I did have a good education at that school.
She was an older lady, and she just couldn't see that letting you be free and have a good time and have fun would be better.
Right. Right.
That's so sad. Is she still alive?
Well, I think so. I haven't talked to anyone in my family in 4 years.
Really?
Because of just that. They wouldn't let me run my own life.
Well,
it lasted into my later life, and it just finally came down to the fact that I had to tell them, get out of my life.
I don't find that odd. I've got a sister I haven't talked to in 3 years and never will again.
Mm-hmm.
Not for that reason, but no, I don't find that odd. Of course, you can choose your friends, but you can't choose your kinfolks.
Right.
You can't choose your parents, and you don't get a choice there. You get what they give you. And
that's
so,
right.
and so you don't really know.
Right.
But you did well in school. Your grades kept
up. Yes.
Your grades were good.
I didn't do as well in the early years, I guess, as I did in later school years. I mean, I think that's typical with a lot of kids. You know, they tend to kind of be lazy the first part of their lives. And then as time went on, I just kind of picked up academically and did well. And in high school, I was a straight-A student.
Oh, you were a straight-A student in high school.
Oh, yes.
But you began studying...
No, I take that back. Biology I was, too. That's right. And then the only thing that I didn't do well in was my freshman year, algebra. I did not like algebra.
You would think with the mind like you have and music, doing music like you, that you would have a mathematic mind. You'd think that you would... You didn't.
It
didn't translate.
Regular math, I'm fine in. I mean, I do things in my head and everything, but algebra, I just could not understand.
Couldn't grasp that algebra.
Right.
It can be tough, I think, on lots of people. But eventually you got it and went on and did fine.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Now, did they have a high school band, per se?
Oh, yes. I played clarinet in the high school band. I played... piano, and then in fifth grade I started on the clarinet. And I really enjoyed that, too.
And do you still have a clarinet?
Don't have a clarinet right now, but if I was given one today, I could still pick it up and play it.
You think you could still play it?
Oh, sure.
I tell you what, let's do. We take a little break, our first break, and be back in just a minute with Deborah Saylor and more Blind Like Me.
Facts about blind folk. Information you probably never need. Titillating tidbits to make you think on the blind side. Here's Mark Christie.
Few more compelling examples of personal independence and social contribution can be found among either sighted or blind Americans than Donald Capps of Columbia, South Carolina. Born in 1928, Capps was educated at the South Carolina School for the Blind and later in public schools. Following his graduation from high school, he enrolled in Draughton's Business College in Columbia and upon receiving his diploma, joined the Colonial Life and Accident Insurance Company of Columbia as a claims examiner trainee. By the end of his retirement, he had risen to the position of staff manager of the claims department. In 1984, Don Capps retired for the Colonial Life and Accident Insurance Company after 38 years of service. Capps first became interested in the organized blind movement in 1953, and by the following year had been elected president of the Columbia chapter of the Aurora Club of the Blind, now the NFB of South Carolina, which he headed for 2 years before assuming his presidency of the state organization. Although Donald Capps has retired from business now, he continues to be as active as effective as ever, exemplifying leadership and confidence. His ongoing dedication to the blind provides inspiration and encouragement to his many colleagues and friends. On the Blind Side, I'm Mark Christie.
On the Blind Side, celebrating the contribution of blind people to societal evolution.
Welcome back to Blind Like Me. I'm Phil Parr. Our guest is Deborah Saylor. She is in Huntsville, Alabama, and loves it there. Says she couldn't be happier. We have gotten her through the School for the Blind in Iowa. Is it Iowa School?
Yes, that's correct.
You know, that's amazing. You're the third blind person I know that went to the Iowa School for the Blind. I mean, because I don't know that many blind people. I mean, what are the chances?
Wow.
I don't suppose you know Jim Snowbarger, do you?
I know of him. I've talked to him several times on the phone.
You know, that was a silly
and
thing.
Actually, I have met him once very briefly. But, yeah, Jim Snowbarger, he's really cool. I really like a lot of the things he does. He does some articles for a magazine that a lot of blind people get called Playback. And he does some musical things for that.
Now, Playback is Ed Potter's magazine.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
I get that also. I haven't been getting it long, so I haven't seen anything he did. You know, I think it was a silly question to ask you that. I think more people know, blind people know Jim Snowbarger than anybody. Everybody you talk to seems to know the man. Of course, he is an incredibly talented fellow.
Oh, yeah.
We have had him, we did a blind handyman with him, have not done a blind like me with him and gone through his life, but I intend to do that at some point in time. But you and then another guy named Jim something that lives in Austin. Jim, I'll never think of this guy. He plays fiddle, but he also went to the Iowa School for the Blind and loved it. So you did the high school and you played in the band. And they had, I guess they probably had a wrestling team at the school.
Oh, they had wrestling, they had track, they had swimming, all kinds of sports. And they would even go to the other schools for the blind in the region and compete, which was really good for the kids. I mean, they got to compete and meet other blind kids and see other schools. And
did they have a cheering section?
Oh, yeah, they had the cheerleading
and
well.
Did you didn't do that. You did the band. You were the music The music band student.
Right.
Yeah. Now, since you were so eclectic in music and you know some about country and know a lot about classical, and did they have a dance band?
No, they didn't have a dance band. When I was there, maybe they did at one time, but in my years, the School for the Blind was starting to lose a lot of its population, and so they didn't have as many students at that time.
I guess that's true because they were starting to mainstream lots of kids, weren't they?
Was starting to come into the picture, right.
And the School for the Blind, I think even the one in Texas, or I guess they have all become a school for multi-handicapped children
that are
blind and have some other handicap. But a blind child who's only disadvantage, or we don't call it a handicap, it's just whose only inconvenience is being blind, went to public school.
Right.
Yeah. But your mother never would have put up with that, would she?
Well, I don't know. She just kind of wanted to protect me in every way.
Yeah.
I think she resented the School for the Blind a lot because they wanted me to do things and she didn't want me to.
Yeah.
Where a lot of with the mainstreaming in the public schools now, when the child is in the public school, a lot of the parents don't know what the child is capable of, and the people that work in the public school system don't know.
I guess that's true, because you never would have gotten the music education in a public school that you got in a school for the blind.
Right.
All right, so you walked across the stage, got your diploma, 62, 72, in about
1980.
In about 1980, and then what did you think you might do with your life?
Well, I always knew... From the time I was 13, I wanted to be an opera singer.
Really?
Oh, yes. I loved opera, oratorio, art song, anything to do with singing classical music. I started taking voice lessons as a seventh grader. I had a few voice lessons as an eighth grader and a seventh grader both. In ninth grade is when I really started seriously studying with the choir director at the school. And he gave me voice lessons, and he left me do operatic arias and art songs. I did a lot of different things at that young age. But then when I was 16, I started to study with a lady at Clark College in Dubuque, Iowa, which is a Catholic school. It's a private school. And her name was Sister Ann Segrist. And she was a wonderful teacher. She wanted the best for me. She could see from the very beginning that I was overprotected. And she knew my mother wasn't doing good things for me, but in high school she didn't say too much about it. When I got to be a college student at Clark, however, I continued studying with her. I studied with her from my junior year in high school all the way through undergrad school. And she always wanted me to do more things. Mom did not let me live on the campus at Clark. My father had died by that time. He died when I was 14, so it was just my mom and me, basically. And when I graduated from the School for the Blind, 4 days later, we moved back to Dubuque, where the rest of the family was.
Uh-huh.
And I went to Clark College in Dubuque, Iowa, got my BA in music performance there.
But
during that time, I'll tell you, Sister Ann tried to help me. She encouraged me to move onto the campus, and as she put it, Deborah, I can still hear her to this day, Deborah, you need to go out and have some 20-year-old fun, not 60-year-old fun. The reason she said that is because the only thing basically that we did, Mom would pick me up right after class every day, and the only thing we ever did was go to bingo on Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday night.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, what fun. When all the other college kids were doing things like going to dances and parties and meeting other people and generally having a good time, I was, as Sister Ann put it, wasting my time playing bingo.
But you weren't, and Sister Ann wasn't, able to convince Mama that this was a good idea.
Right. The only thing that Mom knew was she hated Sister Ann. I mean, just because Sister Ann wanted me to do things with my life, Mom hated her. Oh, you don't listen to old Annie. If you listen to her, you're going down the path of the devil. And
very super religious.
Right.
I got you.
Mm-hmm.
I got you.
And she even tried to use my dad. She said, oh, your father is up in heaven, and he's looking down, and he's crying, thinking about what you want to do.
One of those, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know her, but I don't blame you for getting away from her. Now, an opera singer.
Yes.
A blind opera singer.
Has there been one?
Do you know of one?
Oh, yes. I don't know if you've ever heard of Maureen Young.
I have not, because I'm not at all familiar with opera. But she's a blind opera singer?
Oh, yes. And she does a lot of performing to this day. I mean, she's very, very good. And she has done a lot of singing in operas and a lot of just performing recitals. And
do you know her?
I do. I haven't talked to her in quite a while, though.
We'll talk off air. I would love to do a show with her.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I don't even
know where she is right now.
Maybe we can try to figure out how to get a hold of her. Anyway, you wanted to be an opera singer. Now, I don't know much about opera, and I would hazard a guess that very few blind people do. I guess there would be some probably that would. But opera is a story told in song.
That's correct.
And it is oftentimes is done in a foreign language.
In a foreign language, right.
And someone writes the story, and then someone writes the music to tell the story,
That's
I suppose.
That's right.
And this is what you wanted to do.
That's exactly what I wanted to do.
Did you have the talent to do it?
Oh, yes. Sister Ann said I could have done anything vocally that I wanted to do. I could have sung opera. I could have just given recitals. In other words, done concert singing. A lot of things called art songs that are poems that are set to music by classical composers. I could have done art song recitals. I could have been in oratorios, which are unstaged religious operas. I could have done anything like that.
So
my mother had let Sister Ann do what she wanted to do with me.
This lady who supposedly, we would assume that she knew talent when she saw it,
yes,
said that you could have done anything you wanted to do.
Yes.
My. Where is Sister Ann now? Is she...
Well, unfortunately, she's dead.
She passed away.
Yeah. Died of cancer.
Your mother did, Sister Ann, keep training you or keep teaching you music.
She let her keep giving me voice lessons, but anything other than that she would have liked me to do was off limits.
She wasn't I'll let you get out and let the devil get a hold of you. Oh, well, that's pretty tough. Okay, so you got a B.A. in music.
Right.
From this college in Dubuque, Iowa, what was it called?
Clark College.
Mm-hmm. Does it have a pretty good music department?
They have an excellent music department. In fact, it was one of the best music departments that I had ever known about, at least in the state of Iowa and the whole Midwest region.
Yeah. So you were happy to go to that college?
Oh, yes. I was very happy to go to Clark.
Now, was this lady that was teaching, what's her name? I've forgotten.
Sister Ann.
Was she affiliated with the college? Or?
Yes, she was one of the teachers there. They had a lot of nuns. Being a Catholic college, they had a lot of nuns that taught there.
But she also mentored you in high school also, didn't you say?
Yes. We met her through, I guess it was one of the board members of Clark College that happened to be at something I sang at one time. And
she said, oh, this girl has talent. I'd like to work with her.
Oh, yes.
Well, very good. So, okay, you got a degree, and this puts us at about 1984, 85.
Correct.
And so what did you decide to do then?
Well, then I wanted to go to graduate school.
Uh-huh.
Well, that was a fight in itself. After second semester of my senior year of undergraduate school, Sister uh-huh. Ann just had enough. Certain circumstances just made her know I wasn't going to leave my mom, and I wasn't going to want to do anything really professional with my life. She could just sort of see that. So she said she finally had enough. Well, what happened then was I had talked to this teacher at another college in Dubuque, and he wasn't nearly, I thought, as good, as well qualified as Sister Ann, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And but he was a good teacher, though, don't get me wrong. He was just different than Sister Ann,
uh-huh.
you know. And I had talked to him several times, and he told me about the University of Iowa in Iowa City. And he said, maybe you could go there. And so, well, I thought, but how am I ever going to convince my family to let me go away to school? I thought, see, my brother and my sister were just as bad as my mom. They wanted to protect me in the same way. And so the only way I thought, possibly, maybe mom would move to Iowa City, but I didn't want that either. I wanted to, by this time I was 22, 23 years old, I wanted to be out on my own doing things.
Yeah.
So the way I got to graduate school was I convinced this teacher to help me. I had my mom and my sister come in to his studio, and I sat there and acted like I didn't know why I would have to go to graduate school, what benefits it would give me.
Oh, and had him do the sales pitch.
And had him do the explaining. Because I knew they wouldn't listen to me. I knew they'd just think I was just talking out of my head.
Probably good thinking. So,
yeah.
And you were going, oh, is that right?
Right, exactly.
But you set this up with him to begin
with. I set it up with him to do that. And so that I could get away. And so what would happen then is I did go in the fall of 84 to the University of Iowa, and I would go for Sunday night. Someone in the family would take me there and take me to my dorm room. And on Thursday afternoon, because I didn't have any classes on Friday, they arranged it so that someone would be able to come and get me and bring me home for the weekend. You see, I didn't know how to do anything. I should point this out, too. I didn't know how to take care of myself. I didn't know how to dress myself because my mother dressed me every day. She would give me a bath. She would comb my hair, everything. And so I had to kind of teach myself to do these things adequately enough to go to graduate school and live in a room at least for a couple days a week.
Now, you were in this dorm room with a roommate?
Yeah, I had a roommate my first 2 years, and my last year I was in a room by myself.
But they let you do that, so that gave you a little independence. How did you get to class every day? I mean,
They had something called the Bionic Bus, and it picked me up right at my dorm door. It was for handicapped students, and it picked me up right outside the door of my dorm and took me to the music building, which was where I had all my classes.
Which is where all your classes were.
Being a graduate student.
So right. That was pretty convenient. You had never traveled with a cane.
Well, I did have cane travel in school. That was one of the requirements. But what my family did not let me do, they let me learn to walk with a cane in the residential areas, kind of what was required, that you had to learn to walk around the city of Vinton.
Uh-huh.
I should say the town of Vinton. It was a small town, about 5,000 people. They let me, oh goodness, just the little things like that, but they would not let me learn to, the other high school students had to learn to travel in the larger cities and learn to take a bus, learn how to take a city bus.
All those things that we all learn how to do.
Right, but my mom got me exempt from that I would never have to do that on my own, and so cane travel consisted of just during the day at school, and when I got in the car at night, I was to leave the cane in the car and not use it at home.
All right, let's take our second break here and be back with more of Blind Like Me in just a second. blind sites. Here's a website our crack research team certifies screen reader friendly. Now with this week's blind site, here's Don Shaw.
You know, there's a really large variety of media players that you can put on your computer. And one that I'm using right now and have used now for a while that really seems to be blind friendly is Winamp. The Winamp is a really great sounding player. It's a blind friendly player. And it's really got a lot to offer. Doesn't seem like it uses too much of your computer resources, which for me is definitely a plus. It's got a media library where you can store some things. It's just got a lot of really good things going for it. And besides all that, what makes it kind of cool is if you've got Winamp questions, either for using it as a player or if you want to do a radio broadcast on the Winamp Shoutcast system. If you have any Winamp type questions and how Winamp relates to blind and visually impaired folks, go and check out this really neat website I found. The URL address for this site is www.shanenonrecenet/winamp4thblind.html. Now, say that address twice real quickly. Anyway, type that into your favorite internet browser and go and take a look at them. All your Winamp questions there and then some will be answered. It's a really fine Winamp resource. And being for visually impaired, I would have to give it a screen reader friendliness rating of a 10. Until next time, I'm Don Shaw. Keep on blind sighting.
If you found a screen reader friendly website you'd like us to mention, send your email to blindlikeme, all one word, at txucom.net. And join us again next time for Blind Sight. Guest is Deborah Saylor on Blind Like Me, and Deborah, they realized at an early age, very early age, that this lady was gifted, had musical ability. Her brother had a little rock and roll band, and if they couldn't figure out the chords to the Eagles tune, they just asked her, because she was 4 years old, and by golly, she could tell them that's an A7th. That
that's
wanted
right.
To go to there.
Having perfect pitch made that really easy.
You do have perfect pitch.
Right.
And your brother had some talent, but not nearly as much as you did.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we've got her through. She went to the Iowa School for the Blind. I'm talking about you in abstract, like you're not here. You went to the Iowa School for the Blind and graduated. Then you went to this little college in Dubuque and got a B.A. in music. And mm-hmm. now we have you at graduate school in, where is this now?
Iowa City, Iowa.
This is in Iowa City, Iowa. And this is a nice, prestigious sort of a music academy that you can go to. And you wanted to come out with a doctorate in music.
Well, actually, I was going for a master's.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. It was a regular university, you know. And
all right, so you would go and you would be there Sunday night till Thursday, and they'd pick you up Thursday and take you home.
Right.
And that's how you got through graduate school.
Right. I wasn't allowed to attend any recitals or anything like that because I had to check in with Mom every night. I had to call her and, you know, let her know I was okay. And if I left my room for any reason, she was looking for me. And if she'd try to call me and I wasn't there, oh, that was terrible. And
did you ever think about just taking a hike?
Yeah, I thought about it sometimes, but that couldn't happen until later. After I got my master's degree in 19...
You did get a master's degree.
I did get a master's, right.
From this, this school in Iowa City.
Right.
You got a master's degree in music.
Right.
My. That's wonderful. Reading Braille music.
Reading Braille music.
Well, you see, you couldn't go to recitals. You had to give a lot. You had to do a lot. Give a lot of recitals.
I had to do recitals, right. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed that, and they always came to my recitals. They would come and listen to my recitals. But if I wanted to hear somebody else, I mean, I really had to sneak around if I wanted to get to any performances.
Yeah, but you did graduate. You got a master's degree in music.
Right.
And this puts us up to about 1989, 1988.
Actually, 86, 87. I got my master's in 86, but I finagled my way into staying an extra year. After that extra year, I came home and sat around and did nothing for four years.
What did you do for this extra year?
I just took some classes, some extra classes toward maybe getting a doctorate if I ever would have convinced them to let me get a doctorate, but that didn't work out.
And so with all of this training, you went home and...
And sat around and did nothing. Joined the community choir, but they would take me to rehearsals and...
And you sat in a rocking chair and did nothing.
Did nothing until 1991.
How frustrating. All right, what happened in 91?
Well, I have a cousin. One of my first cousins is an opera singer. And he had sung all over the place. And he happened to be in Dubuque and told me I should be leaving home, getting away from home and getting away from my mother. And he said that there was another teacher besides Sister Ann at Clark College, and his name was Mr. Leese. And my cousin had studied with this Mr. Leese. And he said Mr. Leese would take me as a student, provided that I would get away from home.
Now, wait a minute. Take you as a student...
Just taking voice lessons again to get my voice back in shape after that many years.
Okay, not working towards a doctorate or...
No, just taking lessons.
Just taking voice lessons.
Right.
If you would get away from home.
Right.
And you said...
And I agreed because I wanted to get away. So in 1991, I told Mom I was going to the Iowa Commission for the Blind in Des Moines, an adult training center.
Uh-huh.
And so I went to the Iowa Commission for about a month.
She didn't take to this too well.
No. She had a very hard time with it.
This was your first break. Packed your suitcase, did they?
And I was so excited. I was getting away from home. I remember the first night I was there, I put on Beethoven's Ninth Symphony on my CD player, turned it up and listened to that joyful music and unpacked my suitcase and said, I'm free!
Did they take you there? Or did they...
Well,
how'd you get there?
Yeah, they came. The counselor had come to get me, and that was fine, and I got there. But I only lasted there about a month. It was really hard, and I met somebody.
What do you mean it was really hard?
Training was really hard. They made me. They wanted you to learn to travel using a cane. You went all over the city, learning to travel, cooking. They wanted me to learn to cook, which was something totally new to me. I'd done a little bit in high school, but not nearly what they wanted me to do. And they went on camping trips and water skiing trips, and they had me taking shop. And, it was a wonderful program.
But because you had been so sheltered, you just couldn't handle it.
I just couldn't handle it. And I met somebody through another student there. I met another blind person there. And lady told me about this guy in a little town called Rhinebeck, Iowa.
Uh-huh.
And I talked to him, and he convinced me that this center for the blind wasn't right for me. And I decided that I was going to go and be with him. He was blind, too, but he was living a life where church people took care of him. And...
Now, was this for romantic reasons?
Yes.
This was a mate.
Yeah.
I thought
I really was in love with him.
And so you went and married him?
No. Oh, no, 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 no. No, yeah. We never married. We never lived together or anything. But...
what a dull life.
Yeah. It was just, I went there, got my own apartment, and he basically tried to change me into something that I wasn't. He wanted me to... become like he was. He said I was too sickening sweet. because I like to talk to people and act real happy. Now, I was always a happy person.
He wanted you to get into religion, or he wanted
Yeah, he was real religious, and he wanted me to basically switch from piano and voice to organ, and I liked playing the organ. He was an organist, and I enjoyed the organ, but he wanted me to kind of give up what I was and become who he wanted me to be.
And so how long did you stay around this man?
Well, he stayed in Rhinebeck for 5 years. He left in 96, and I stayed in Rhinebeck for 4 more years. Yeah. And then something neat happened.
So this was your life, was playing the organ at the church, did you? And what did you do during the week? How did you subsist on the SSI? Or what?
Yeah, right.
Which is a very tough existence.
Right. And we just would get together, and he liked to cook. So we'd get together and cook and play the organ during the week.
But you did not marry him.
Oh, no. No. But in 1999... that's when my life really began. I went to an ACB convention in Los Angeles with a friend. I got in contact again with this friend that I had known in school, and we had lost contact for many years, and then she called me out of the blue one night, and we got talking again, and she said, would I like to come to L.A. with her in the summer of 99? I said, well, sure, never dreaming I would actually do it, because I still had to talk to Mom all the time and let her know what I was doing. And
oh, I didn't realize. So Mom was still had a great hold on you.
Oh, yes.
You weren't living at home, but you were involved with the church, so that made her happy, and so you weren't...
were
taking care of you, and so that was fine with her.
Yeah, she was okay with that. She didn't like it that I wasn't with her, but she was okay. I was only 100 miles away.
And so this girl called and said, you want to give her a name?
Well,
no. Let's don't then.
Uh-huh.
All right, so this lady called and asked you if you would like to go to an ACB convention.
Right.
And you said...
And I said, well, yeah, that would be fun. Actually thinking that I would change my mind later and
never
make
go.
Up some excuse.
Yeah.
And... Well, then the time came closer and closer, and I thought, why not? Why don't I do this? Why don't I see what's out there?
But with great feelings of intrepidation,
yeah.
Great fear, we all would have.
She planned the whole thing.
So this was in 99.
Yes.
And you went to an ACB convention.
And I'll never forget, I saw that there was a world out there. I remember the last morning I was there, I was sitting in the bathtub. I'll never forget it. And I just all of a sudden began to cry, and I said... myself, I said, there's a world out there,
yeah.
And I want to see it. I want to know what's out there.
Ah, bless your heart. And you'd met so many blind people who were so independent and doing so many things and so happy and having such a good time. Why couldn't you be one of
right.
them?
Right. And so then, when I got home, I had been getting this interactive magazine for the blind called The Newsreel.
Which is Irwin Hotz magazine.
Right.
Yeah.
I had been getting that, and I thought, well, I could send in an article and just introduce myself. And so being a cassette magazine, I was able to play one of my compositions. I played and sang something that I had wrote.
Uh-huh.
There was a guy called me up. He wanted me to do some music for him. And so he called me, and we became friends.
Uh-huh.
And I'll tell you what, he told me about the Center for the Blind, the NFB Center in Louisiana, in Ruston, Louisiana.
Uh-huh.
And he had worked in rehab for quite a few years, and he told me, he said, Deborah, he said, if you don't do this now, you'll never do it. And he told me about several different clients he had worked with.
He's probably right.
And I was 38 years old at the time.
Uh-huh.
And he said, if you don't do it now, you won't do it. So he told me it would be the hardest thing I ever did in my life. And he was right. But it was exactly what I needed.
And so you went to this center, this NFB center in Louisiana.
Exactly. In September of 2000.
What did they teach you?
Oh, they taught me a lot of the same things that they had in Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
But I had support at this program. I had the support of this friend that I was telling you about.
And you were ready to learn them now.
I was ready to learn, and he was there. We talked all the time. Besides, I had the support of all the other faculty and students, It was a wonderful program. I needed everything that they taught me, and I was ready to learn it. That's right. That's the important thing. I was ready to learn it. And I learned Braille. Well, not Braille, I shouldn't say that, but they offered. They taught Braille to people.
But you were already prolific Braille.
Right. But what I did learn how to do was use a talking computer, and that's how they got me the job in Omaha, Nebraska, with Marriott, taking reservations. And that job was, it was a good job experience type job. I learned about the business world. And
you met a lot of people that you never would have met had you not done that.
That's right, and it was a good thing for me to do.
Now, this guy in Louisiana was just a friend. He was not. You were not involved with him.
Right. Mm-hmm. He wasn't in Louisiana. He's actually, we're still really good friends. He's here in Huntsville.
Oh, he's here in Huntsville.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, but he got you to this Louisiana, the Center for the Blind, and NF, it's owned by, I guess, National Federation of the Blind.
Right.
In Louisiana. And you stayed there how long? 6 months? A year?
I was there 9 months to the day.
Really? And you learned so many things, and they got you the job in Iowa not a telemarketer, but a customer relations person with Marriott?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you went and did that. We're up to about 2000 now.
Actually, yeah, July of 2001.
Okay, so away we went to Omaha.
Right, and I lived there on my own. I might mention that while I was in Louisiana, I left out so much. First of all, in 2000, this friend of mine encouraged me to go to the Van Cliburn International Amateur Piano Competition. And
really?
When I say amateur, I mean people that are like maybe one credit away from a doctorate. They're concert pianists, actually, but they've chosen to make their money, to make their living in another career.
Okay.
And so they're called amateurs, but man, can they play. Well, I went. This was in Fort Worth, Texas. I went in June of 2000, and I took third place.
Really?
And I didn't ever expect to do it, but I got the prize for the most outstanding performance of a piece in a romantic period for playing Debussy's Clair de Lune.
Really?
And I also played about an hour's worth of music through the whole competition, through all the rounds, and I got third place. And I did that again in 2002 when I went. But in between there, I went to Paris, France, by myself for another piano competition.
By yourself.
By myself. And this is a person who didn't even know how I would get from Iowa to Minneapolis, Minnesota. I wanted to attend a concert there. And I didn't go because I had no idea how I would do, how would I get there and what would I do once I got there? How would I get a cab and get to a hotel? And by the time 2001 came, I had learned so much that I was able to go to Paris, France, and get the cab from the airport, get the hotel, ask directions to a restaurant in French, and walk there by myself.
By yourself.
All by myself, right.
So we have made great strides forward.
Oh, yes.
Okay, I know we've left out a lot, but we're getting a little short on time. Get me from Omaha to Huntsville.
My friend here in Huntsville used to send me a lot of interviews and such concerts that were on our radio station because he knew I loved all the cultural events in Huntsville. When I'd come to visit him and my other friends here, we'd go to concerts and do a lot of things. We did so much to take in all the culture here. And I loved Huntsville so much. And I had made up my mind I was going to move here one day to take part in all this stuff.
All right.
And so he sent me an interview with this Ars Nova School of the Arts. They were doing an opera at that time, and they were talking about it on the radio. I like to study with different teachers. I'll take a lesson from a teacher just to see what they teach and what their teaching methods are like. And the head of Ars Nova here in Huntsville is a voice teacher. And my friend said, well, why don't you schedule a lesson with her for when you're visiting here at Christmas time? This was Christmas of 2002. And he said, while you're at it, why don't you ask her about a job at Ars Nova? Because he knew that I wanted to get back into music full time. I had done a little teaching in Rhinebeck, Iowa while I was there, but that wasn't very much. But I did enjoy it. And he knew that I wanted to get back to music practicing and teaching. So I said, yeah, I will ask her about a job. So when I arranged the lesson with her and went to to do that, I asked her about a job, and she said that there was definitely an opening. I told her that I was very much interested in teaching blind students who were going to public school. I wanted to teach them Braille music and piano and voice, but I'm teaching primarily sighted students right now. I only have one blind student, but I may be getting another one very shortly. And so that's how I got to Ars Nova.
And they hired you as a music teacher. You teach voice and piano?
That's correct, both. Mm-hmm.
Voice and piano. Now, this is a community college or a full 4-year?
It's a private school. It's for anybody from young child, pre-kindergarten age, up through adults. My youngest student happens to be 8 years old, and my oldest is 73.
Okay, you are not their only piano teacher.
Oh, no. They have several piano faculty members and voice faculty members. They also teach violin, flute, different instruments
like that. Okay, this is just a music school?
It's just a music school, a privately run music school for anybody who wants to take lessons.
Ars Nova Music School, and it's in Huntsville, Alabama.
Right.
And you've been there a year.
Yes.
So you have gotten your first evaluation, and you were approved.
Very satisfied.
We loved Deborah Saylor, and you know, I could talk to you for hours, and your life story is wonderful. This is one of the hazards of not knowing, is you don't know how long it's going to take. But then I like to be surprised, and I have been pleasantly by your story. And we are absolutely, completely out of time.
Oh,
I know. I feel the same way. I want to do another show with you because I want to hear you play. And I want to visit with you some more. But I can't right now because I'm out of time and I got to go. Deborah Saylor has been our guest. And Deborah, thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's been wonderful.
Now, was that lady's story great or what? That just knocked me out. And she not only had to overcome blindness, not only had to deal with that, but she had to deal with this overprotective mother who just was not going to give up. What? Just, you know, that makes it all worth it to me to do these. And by the way, as I have mentioned several times, this is so far been a labor of love. We don't get paid for this. It's just something we're doing. But that makes it all worth it, a story like hers. What a wonderful lady. I hope to meet her someday. Anyway, Blind Like Me, we hope you will come and be a guest on the show. Our email address is blindlikeme@txucom.net. That'll get you a hold of me, or you can use my address, philparr@txucom.net. We also have, of course, the Blind Handyman. We always need guests. We have really more guests for Blind Like Me than we do the Blind Handyman. If you do anything with your hands, any kind of woodwork or carpentry or plumbing or anything with your hands, make potholders or anything you might do with your hands, we'd love to have you as a guest on our Blind Handyman show. And you can reach us at the same addresses. Just use Phil Parr, P-H-I-L-P-A-R-R, at txucom.net. That'll be as good as any. Or my phone number, 936-634-9500. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll see you next week for more Blind Like Me.